The day after a warning about falling space debris, what actually came down was a ballistic missile. In July 2026, a Chinese nuclear submarine fired a missile out into the Pacific. There are three questions worth asking in this video. First, why did China deliberately show off a nuclear force that is supposed to stay hidden? Second, why did the warning about that launch first arrive as a notice about space debris? And third, why did island nations that have long relied on Chinese support turn around and protest? Let's go through what this single dummy warhead made visible, one step at a time. First, let's lay out what happened. On July the 6th, 2026, a Chinese Navy nuclear submarine fired a single SLBM. An SLBM is a ballistic missile launched from a submarine. What it carried was not a nuclear warhead, but a training dummy. The missile flew across the open Pacific for roughly 7,300 kilometers. It reportedly landed near the boundary between Kiribati and Tuvalu, two small Pacific island nations. This was the first time China had ever publicly announced a ballistic missile launch from a submarine. State media described it as part of routine training, not aimed at any particular country. What drew attention was how the warning for this launch was issued. On July the 5th, China told Japan it was setting up a zone for falling space debris. Part of that zone lay inside Japan's exclusive economic zone, south of the Kii Peninsula. An exclusive economic zone, or EEZ, is the stretch of sea where a coastal state holds special rights. China only told Japan it was a ballistic missile launch about 90 minutes before firing. The United States got a few hours notice, and Australia around 23 hours. The timing varied country by country. Japan's chief cabinet secretary, the government's top spokesman, said the missile landed outside Japan's EEZ. Governments across the region voiced their concern, one after another. Australia's Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, called it a provocative act that destabilized the region. New Zealand said it had been notified in advance, but not consulted. The Prime Minister of the Solomon Islands lodged a strong protest with China's resident ambassador. The U.S. State Department was reported to have criticized China's opaque nuclear buildup as a serious concern. Let's take a moment to sort out nuclear submarines and SLBMs. When we hear nuclear submarine, we tend to picture a sub loaded with nuclear missiles. But strictly speaking, it means a submarine that is powered by a nuclear reactor. Because it generates its own power as it goes, it can stay submerged for months at a time. These submarines split into two types, depending on their role. One is the attack submarine, which hunts enemy ships with torpedoes and the like. The other is the ballistic missile submarine, which carries nuclear-armed missiles and stays hidden. The one that fired in 2026 was the second kind, a ballistic missile submarine. The job of a ballistic missile submarine is not to fight, but to stay hidden. A land-based missile site has a known location, so it can be destroyed in a first strike. A submarine lurking in the deep ocean, by contrast, is extremely hard to locate. That is why it has long been seen as able to survive a nuclear attack and still strike back. This power to retaliate is called a second strike capability. It makes an adversary believe that striking first will not stop the response. And that belief is the foundation of nuclear deterrence, the idea that it prevents nuclear war in the first place. The meaning of this launch comes into focus when you line it up against history. The times China has fired a long-range ballistic missile out into the Pacific are, in fact, very few. The first was in 1980, a full-range test of the DF-5 ICBM, China's first-ever Pacific launch. An ICBM is an intercontinental ballistic missile, one that can cross between continents. The second was an ICBM in 2024, which analysts say came down off French Polynesia. and the 2026 SLBM landed near the boundary between Kiribati and Tuvalu. Just 3 times in 46 years. A long-range launch into the Pacific is genuinely rare. This stretch of ocean is covered by a framework called the Rarotonga Treaty. Signed in 1985, it declares the South Pacific a nuclear-free zone. It was also a statement against a history in which great powers had used the region as a nuclear testing ground. But what the treaty bans is testing that involves a nuclear explosion and the deployment of nuclear weapons. The missile that was fired carried a dummy warhead with no nuclear explosion. So it did not directly violate the letter of the treaty. That gap is why New Zealand's foreign minister criticized it as running counter to the treaty's purpose and intent, rather than breaking it outright. So how did people outside the region see this test? Let me sort the reactions on Reddit by theme. What stood out was that, in sharp contrast to governments, serious concern, cool, and unimpressed takes were in the majority. A common view was that a missile test is nothing unusual among countries that already hold nuclear weapons. Some pointed out that China has been testing SLBMs since the 1980s and called the framing clickbait. People who were genuinely alarmed were, if anything, the minority. That said, this is reaction on the English language internet and does not represent public opinion in the island nations themselves. The next most common thread was people calling out Western hypocrisy. One line: it is ironic for a West that ran its own nuclear tests to be furious about a test in the South Pacific. The reply to that: if it is really no big deal, then why not test it in your own waters? And another voice: whether it compares to the United States is beside the point. To the country living next door, it is a threat. Criticism of hypocrisy and the felt reality of a nearby threat kept talking past each other. The third theme brought out the text of the Rarotonga Treaty and weighed the launch's legality. One reading: the treaty bans testing and deploying nuclear explosive devices, not the launch of a dummy warhead. Others noted that a non-nuclear test does not amount to nuclear proliferation. The discussion even reached the clause-level question of whether China is a party to the treaty at all. What marked this thread was calm, text-based analysis, rather than emotional condemnation. Now we reach the heart of this video. The first thing that stands out is that China deliberately announced and displayed an undersea nuclear force. The strength of a ballistic missile submarine lies in its location, staying unknown. Its activity is, by design, meant to be kept thoroughly hidden. Yet China, following its 2024 ICBM, went and announced a launch from the sea. It has entered a stage of deliberately showing off a nuclear force meant to stay hidden. That force is a reassessment of China's nuclear forces, not just in numbers, but in the quality of a working second strike. But a major caveat comes attached: China has not disclosed the missile's type. Some analysts say it was likely a new model with a range over 10,000 kilometers, the JL-3. But that is an estimate, and others say it cannot yet be told apart from the older JL-2. It is still too early to conclude that an undersea nuclear force able to reach the U.S. mainland is complete. The second point is the blank space in notification rules that the space debris warning exposed. In 1988, the United States and the Soviet Union agreed to give each other advance notice of ballistic missile launches. It was a safety mechanism between great powers, meant to prevent a nuclear war triggered by miscalculation. But between the United States and China, there is no agreement of that kind. So this warning ended up varying in both timing and content from one country to the next. It also fell short of the international norm of giving at least 24 hours notice of a ballistic missile launch. We can't say whether the warning was ill intent or simply an unbuilt system, but the blank space beneath it, we think, is real. The third point is that reading this as the same as a North Korean launch would miss what it really is. North Korea's launches are carried out with no notice and are condemned as breaches of United Nations resolutions. China, on the other hand, gave notice, inadequate as it was, used a dummy warhead and dropped it in open water. You can read this as behaving by the grammar of deterrence between nuclear powers, not the grammar of provocation. Both the United States and Russia conduct SLBM tests, with notice given. But you can also read it as quietly eroding the region's non-nuclear norms while keeping a legal form. These two readings do not contradict each other. It matters to see that they can both be true at once. The Foundation is a view that is neither it's legal, so it's fine, nor it's China, so it's a provocation. The fourth point, and the most striking, is what the island nations did. The most symbolic case was the Solomon Islands. The prime minister of a country long seen as closest to China said openly that this is not what friends do. For these island nations, China is one of their largest backers through infrastructure investment and more. And that backer used their sea as a testing range. The patron becomes, at the same time, a military risk. That's the dilemma. Fiji signed a defense treaty with Australia on the very day of the launch. Yet it also says it will not let go of its economic ties with China. This is not about picking a camp. It is about holding both great powers on the scales and maximizing what you can get. And right now, the Pacific Islands Forum, the region's main bloc of nations, is reportedly weighing a joint statement condemning China. Where that statement lands will be the test of whether these nations can move from passive bystanders to a group that sets terms for the great powers, together. The fifth point is, why this particular moment? Rather than a single answer, it is closer to reality to see several threads converging at once. First, the launch came just hours after Australia and Fiji signed a defense treaty. Some analysts read it as a political signal aimed at the United States and its allies. Second, the timing overlapped with joint military exercises between China and Russia. It put an undersea nuclear force and surface cooperation on display in the same window. Third, Communist Party media framed it as showing resolve toward unification with Taiwan. That reads as a deterrent message, meant to make the United States think twice about intervening. Fourth, there is a domestic angle as well. In recent years, corruption purges have swept China's rocket force, casting doubt on its nuclear forces. Announcing a successful Navy test may also have aimed to dispel that doubt. We can't determine from the outside which thread was primary, but it is more natural to see a moment chosen to reach several audiences at once. Let's bring this together. What flew in this test was not a nuclear warhead, but a dummy. It hurt no one and violated no country's territory. And yet this single dummy warhead made a great deal visible. A race in nuclear deterrence that is supposed to stay hidden, sunk beneath the sea. A blank space between the United States and China, with not even a rule for notifying a launch. And island nations working the scales between a patron and a military risk. This is not a distant fire for Japan either. The space debris warning arrived at the Japan Coast Guard. The declared zone included part of Japan's exclusive economic zone. When the next warning comes, how will the notification rules and the regional framework receive it? That question, we think, will outlast any detail about the missile's performance. You can find the full analysis and more reactions on our blog, Seikan, linked in the description. Thanks for watching.